Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as, improving your business life, improving your family life, dealing with family crisis intervention issues, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you can all do me a big favor. Please check out some of our past shows at AnswersForTheFamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests as well as some dynamic co-hosts, and where they're all going to be discussing ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. Now, I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or someone you know who can benefit from a particular show. I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, as we start the show off, the question that is on many people's lips now, and I get people now that I run into in the grocery store or at the gym that say, where in the world is Gabriella? So, Gabriella, where are we now?
I always have to giggle when you say that. I do not know why. Okay. Hi, everyone. And where in the world am I? I see windmills. It's blowing like crazy. I'm on the side of the highway. I'm safe, but a little illegal, I think, where I am. And I am about half an hour out of Palm Desert. I'm on a side road off the main highways on my way to L.A.
Well, now let me just share something, because when you started that by saying, I see windmills, I'm sure there were people that went, wow, she's in Sweden now. she's in Denmark. There's all these things that they started to think about. But yes, I knew that you're in, in the Palm Springs, Palm Desert area.
The energy ones. Yeah, yes. Those for the good energy in the desert. So it's awesome to see them put to work, because I can tell you one thing, it's very, very windy.
Well, I want to thank you for being here last week and handling things. It was great. I got a chance to hear the show, and as usual, you were wonderful. So now share with a little bit, especially for those people that it might be their first time, share a little bit about what it is that you're doing and the Dare to Be Kind movement.
So what I'd love is that you jump on board. You're part of this movement. It's so easy. Go to our website, daretobekindmovement.com, and click I'm in at the bottom. We are always looking for your story. And you're going to say, what story? We all have a story. Wait till you hear our guest today. She has an awesome story. Mm-hmm. So stories make up part of who we are, what we experience, and what we can bring to the next person. And I say that with emphasis, what we can bring to the next person. What we don't realize is that when we're going through something like I did a couple of shows ago with taking care of my elderly and ailing father, I actually wrote about it afterwards, because that story can connect to someone that finds themselves in, let's pick a country, Austria, mm-hmm. and that finds themselves there and that feels so alone and so incapable. And we all know what that feels like. And the moment they connect to a story on a heartfelt level, they know that they're not alone, and they suddenly feel capable, and there is a growth that you have inside of you, like a mite. I call it a mite. Mm-hmm. And it grows, unfortunately, from the inside. I'd like to grow a little bit from the outside. But you know what? It grows. And that mite helps you to overcome whatever situation that you're in right now. And I really mean that. So the Dare to Be Kind movement collects all these stories, talks and interviews all these people. And so we want you to call Alan. Do more than ask him where I am. Say, when can I be interviewed? That's what we want. Because your story gets the awareness out there, whether it's suicide, whether it's bullying, whether it's harassment in the workplace, whether it's school shooting, whether it's taking care of an ailing family member, whether it's death, whether it's grieving your dog. All these things or experiences that we have every day. And one of the things that you'll learn, you know, from our guest is that without you, our stories actually don't get to have an impact. So, for example, if I see something odd every single day in the street where I live and I report it, I might actually save a child. Mm-hmm. I might actually save someone that's in human trafficking. And I'm just saying that because I know a friend of mine who did that. And the same for Alan. Alan is doing such awesome things with Runaway Teens and other private eye stuff. And can you imagine when he finds that kid that doesn't want to be found? And he does more than just find them. Now he has to cajole the parents into kindness. Right, Alan? Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah. And kindness means, can we do it differently? Yep. Is there a way that we can stop being rigid? Is there a way, you know, we think of kindness as lovey-dovey, but it's so many things, so many aspects of kindness. And whether you want to call it love or whether you want to call it whatever you want to call it, we call it dare to be kind because you have to dare to do it. And you know what? I get refused and rejected often. Mm-hmm. It's okay. You have to dare to get a rejection. Not everyone wants kindness. That's more than okay. But just remember one thing. It has nothing to do with money. And let's do one simple act of kindness in a 2-mile radius. And our guest is doing it in a much broader radius. But let's start with two. And that's basically what we're about.
Well, you know what, Gabrielle? What you're doing is incredible. But just to spread that awareness. Because, I mean, people could... When you get on an elevator, just tell someone, oh my God, you look so pretty today. I mean, that simple changes somebody's complete confidence level. That's love. That's kindness. Yep. And we could do it all day long to people in line.
And have you noticed that that person grows from the inside? They stand straighter. They hold their shoulders less slumped. They're suddenly active and present. It's amazing when we do that. I do it even the other way. You know, when everyone looks at the floor in the elevator and I go, maybe this is a moment to all say hi. And then look at me like, you annoying little thing. I do it anyway.
Well,
go back to you, Alan.
Well, Gabrielle, first of all, again, and again, the reason that we have you on the show is because you're doing such wonderful things. Mm-hmm. Now, share a little bit about what people can do, as far as it going to the site. Now, you've talked about the fact that they can do it within their own 2-mile radius, just do something kind, but just talk about how they can join the movement, because I think that's how we make a difference. We don't do it individually. Yep. We then bring other people in and we realize that we're all part of that same tribe that is going to make a positive difference.
Yeah. So basically being part of the tribe is really easy. Connect with me. It's my number is out there everywhere. Go to daretobekindmovement.com. You will find my number is actually on the site. My number is on the site. My email is on the site. Contact me. I mean, the worst you can get is my answering service because I'm talking to Alan. But you will in a jiffy. I call you back. And it doesn't matter where you are. We have WhatsApp, we have Skype, we have Zoom. It doesn't matter what country, it doesn't matter what time zone. Your story, your voice matters. Mm-hmm. And just by taking the act of calling me, you are part of that movement. So we want kindness instigators that in their country try to do exactly what I do, because we can't all do it alone. Mm-hmm. We have to do it together. Mm-hmm. And your story. So what is it that you experienced when you were in South Africa? What happened to you when you were in LA watching homeless people. Is there something that you can teach us? And don't worry. If you're worried about writing, I'm an author. I will help you write the story. It's not about that. I just take the interview and I'll do the magic behind the scenes with a lady called Tomoko, who's basically my brain and my right hand. And she'll make sure that your story is so beautiful and connects with people. And that's what we want. That someone reads that pain that you went through. And it didn't go for nothing. At that moment, it's going to help someone else.
Absolutely.
That's what we want.
Now, but there is something else that we want. Now, anybody out there, if you are the person who books speakers anywhere in the world, okay, go, you know, get a hold of Gabriella. I mean, she is speaking at schools, at hospitals, at, you know, the Rotary Club, whatever it is, whatever group it is that you have.
Universities,
yep. Yes. Whatever group it is that you have, or maybe you're connected with the media. Maybe you want to do a piece on a local TV show or something. Get in touch and find out what the schedule is, because she'll shift the schedule and swing by. You know what I mean? Because I've seen it. I've been, where are you this week? And she says, well, I'm here. But next week I'm going to be here, and we're making this shift because we got this great invitation to go to a particular area. So wherever
it
is.
I'm grateful you said that, Alan, because I don't ask enough for the movement. And it is true. To keep our movement alive, I need to do way more paid speaking than the stuff that I do voluntarily, of course. So I ended up having 2 days volunteer work, whatever that entailed, 2 days talking for free in universities and schools, and 2 days interviewing. And that's basically your week. And now it's turned into 24/7 volunteering everywhere. And that, Alan is totally right. I need to bring a little shift back in there, because otherwise I'm knocking on your door.
I was going to say that particular speech might be from your front room.
So yes, the movement does need your help. Yeah. And I know you feel like you don't see it, but just sit with me over the phone, on Zoom, anywhere for half an hour. And you'll understand that this is happening. People shift every day because you've taken the time. Mm-hmm. That's the key word, time. You've given them time. I have children that say to me, you spend more time with me than my parents. And that kind of makes me cry, because at the one hand, I'm really glad someone sits with them. But on the other hand, if that is something you could do between now and next week's show, give your time to someone, and it doesn't have to be 5 hours. The time could be 10 minutes. That's what I hope that you'll do this week.
All right. Well, with that, again, I think everybody has their marching orders now. So if you know that you want to do that, if you're driving, if you weren't able to write that down, please know that you can go to the Answers for the Family website or Facebook page. We will have that information as to how you can get a hold of Gabriella. Or again, go to the Dare to Be Kind movement .com, I think, and then go to .com, and then go to the Dare to Be Kind movement Facebook page. And you will see there's clips of her speaking at school. So you'll see what's going on in these kids' mind. You'll see them change as you're watching, or, you know, whatever group that it is, you can see it and you can feel it. So
is it Dare the number 2 to be kind, or?
No, it's Dare TOBE kindmovement.com. Yeah, okay. good call.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Yeah.
Our hashtag is #D2BK.
Okay. I also, because I think you're doing this work, but, you know, there's something magical, and everyone should know this, that if you take, because I've been experiencing it, but if you take one step, just one step of faith, or in what you're passionate about, in kindness and love in the universe, one step, the universe and God will meet you 99% of the way.
Yep.
They do.
Yep. And help you with those next steps that may seem a little more difficult. That's a great point.
Thank you for saying that.
Yes.
All right. Agreed.
Yes. So anyway, with that, we are going to talk a little bit about a topic that for those of you that have listened to the show for a while, you know that it's very near and dear to my heart because it's something that I have sort of been a boots on the ground person for many, many years. And I am just so thankful that there are people like Kelly that are out there continuing this fight, but doing it from the standpoint of drawing publicity to it, drawing things, you know, to where people are now seeing it more, as opposed to, I mean, I've been to where I take on a case and I work a case and I may help one person or one group. But this is a way in which I think the information is getting out there in such a way that that it makes a great difference. So,
well, I want to be clear that, you know, well, first of all, there's power in media, you know,
yes,
that, in radio,
yes,
right? And so when you do a film or documentary, you have, you know, that platform, which is amazing and awesome to spread awareness, to create awareness and a call to action. But I want to be really clear that the people that I'm highlighting, the nonprofit organizations that I'm highlighting, are really the heroes. They're boots on the ground in the trenches doing the work.
Right. No, and I get that, and I know that you highlighted in there greatly. Mm-hmm. And in fact, so I don't even know that I've really told them enough about you yet. Mm-hmm. So let me share. First of all, the topic we're really talking about here, it's the horrific exploitation of sex trafficking, and it goes on around the world. So Kelly Galindo, she's an American actress, director, and producer, and her work has spanned decades in television, theater, and film. Now, she's currently directing 26 Seconds. It's a documentary feature film that has driven her passion to give a voice to the children and the women who are victims of the sex trade. And for the past 3 years, this film has taken her around the world, and it's to expose those abuses that are happening. Now, in her film, she highlights the incredible organizations that have actively stepped forward to do something about this, which has been freeing thousands of women and children. Now, in addition, Kelly balances her time by directing and acting while passing on her craft onto future generations of students as a professor at the Dodge College of Film and Media Arts at Chapman University. She has also taught at the UCLA School of Theater, Film, and Television, as well as the Orange County School of Arts. She is a lifetime member of the Actors Studio as a director and as an actor. So, Kelly, welcome back to Answers for the Family.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Now, Gabriella?
Yes.
Now, I just want to check because I know you're sitting beside the road somewhere, so I want to make sure you're still there.
I wanted to make sure I was still here.
There we go. Wait a minute.
Sorry.
Wait a minute.
That's my phone. I thought it was on mute.
I know. Was that the happy song?
Yes, my phone ring is happy.
Okay. Well, next time we may want to use that as bumper music. So. So, and I know that you and I talked about some questions. Why don't you start things off with one of the questions that you had?
Oh, me?
No. No, meaning Gabriella. Oh. Sorry. I'm turning here because we got Facebook Live, so I'm sort of looking at.
I love it because Kelly, you're guest and host at the same time.
I know.
This really natural, and Alan, sit back and enjoy.
That's right.
Kelly, I love what you're doing. I have always been passionate about human trafficking, especially when I found out that there was a correlation with bullying. And so my question to you today is, I heard that it took 5 years to make this specific documentary. Did you know that when you set out to do it?
No.
And if you had known, would you have done it?
No, I didn't know it was going to take this long. And yes, I would still have done it. But I do want to say it hasn't been 5 years. I don't know where that, it probably will be. I was in production filming in 9 different countries for 3 years. And so production wrapped August 31st, which was that 6 months ago already?
Yeah.
So 3.5 years. But now we're moving on to post-production, and I have a praise report. We just got a incredible editor, and that's everything. He's won 3 Emmy Awards. His name is Mark Wilkin. We're really proud and happy to have him on the project. You had mentioned that, you know, I teach at Dodge, and I just have to give a shout out to my students because they've been incredible. I've had interns, probably over 40 interns from Chapman University, and they, this is such, not only filmmaking as a collaborative business, right? But what you're talking about too, Gabrielle, you know, in mm-hmm. just waking up the world that we're all in this together. And so I just wanted to give a shout out to my students, though, because they've been incredible. And I have a team this summer, assistant. They actually, most of them just graduated. I have a couple that are still in school for another year, but most of them just graduated this May. I think just yesterday, mm-hmm. Saturday, 2 days ago. But they'll be assistant editor and myself. So, I remember one of my students 3 years ago saying, "Oh, this project will take you about 5 years," and I said, "No," and he goes, "Yeah," and I go, "No," and he was so right, because I even think it's even more from, you know, pre-production, production, post-production, and then marketing and promotion of the film, right?
Yeah.
And to be honest, it's probably been 4 years I've been on it, because there was a good 6 months of pre-production before I even started. So yeah, almost five. I've been on the project 4 years so far. I started out, Gabrielle, you know, I said, "God, you reveal the story that you want told." So I knew it was going to be a process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was learning as I went. Through the survivors that I've interviewed, and the human trafficking experts, and the founders of the nonprofit organization. So of course I was learning as I went, as it should be. You know, you can't just do something without even knowing anything about it. But I am happy to say that somebody did tell me that I was on track, doing great, because documentaries sometimes take 5 to 10 years. I said, "What?" So I'm hoping it was. So I'm hoping it's not 10 years, but the answers are resounding yes. I would have done it again.
Now you mentioned a little bit about the interviews, and in fact I was talking with somebody who knew that you were going to be on the show, and they said, I think they got the press release, so they knew a little bit about, you know, what you've done, and they said, "Oh my God, wasn't that dangerous?" So the question then is that, and I know that it can be dangerous getting interviews like that, because those interviews are essentially evidence. How were you protected? You know, and did it get dangerous? How were you protected? And how were you able to convince the women, in some cases, to talk on camera? Because there's a fear of them also.
Well, I have to say, the danger wasn't with the interviews, and I'll tell you why in a moment. The danger was when I was shooting undercover in red light districts and in, you know, clubs or karaoke bars or wherever they're selling women. That was the dangerous part. And especially my trip to Iraq, obviously, because at the time ISIS was not, you know, was prevalent there. But the reason why it wasn't dangerous with the girls is because of my partnerships with the nonprofit organizations and my media agreements. They actually arranged for me to interview survivors that have been through their programs. So it was
much nicer. Yes.
Yeah. So that part wasn't dangerous. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Nice. But it was undercover though, right? I mean, you just alluded. I'm so curious.
Mm-hmm. Not my interviews with founders or human trafficking experts or survivors. That wasn't undercover. My B footage, basically, when I go into
exactly.
the clubs. Yeah.
The strip club.
Correct.
You know, there.
Correct.
Were you ever at a moment that you thought, "Gosh, they can see my face and I need to be really aware and careful because, you know, you almost feel like you have their lives in your hands there"?
You know what? I have that gene of not having fear. Or maybe it's just my, you know, I believe in what the Bible says, you know, not to have fear. So I didn't have fear. I also think that, you know, when I was in Thailand, I remember I had a Sony A7 on me. It's not a small camera. And I was going down the red light district with it. And I think that because I look like, you know, an older housewife, I think that they don't notice what happened until after I've passed and I've already got the footage.
Okay. For everyone on the radio, Alan, you have to put a picture up of her because I'm sure it's totally baloney what you just said. Okay.
But
this,
I mean,
is two women understanding each other here.
Well, what I mean is, it's not like, I think me being a woman shooting, it was different than my, than my young male cinematographers. They would have probably been stopped because they're males. I think, because literally people were like, how'd you get that shot? And it was, I mean, it was times when I just grabbed the camera and would shoot. And I think that a time I passed people, it was already too late. You know, I think.
Well, let me just add,
the fearlessness of wanting to get the message.
Yeah,
I'm very driven on like point A to B and what I need to get, and I don't think of anything else in between, and including fear. Good. The only time I had fear was when I got a letter from Pastor Kevin Brown, who I went to Iraq with, and he said, "You need to get life insurance." And I said, "Oh, for what?" And he said, in case they need to send your body back. And I was like, oh, this is serious. Wow. Oh, wow. Oh.
You're like, oh, they don't have to.
I'm like, well, they send my head with my body. So I didn't really know how that was going to play out. But that was the only time that I knew that, oh, wow, this is serious.
Okay. Mm. Gotcha.
Yeah, the only time.
And I think if people want to go to the website, if you go to, it's 26 seconds. doc.com. If you go to the website, one of the things that you'll see, there's a little bit of the footage that's on there that's shot inside some of these locations. And you can see, there appears a couple of times, you can kind of see what the angle is of the camera. So you can tell that the camera is hidden. But you can also see in at least one of the clips where there appears to be one of the mamasans that sees the camera and the audio isn't on there, but it appears as though she's not happy and trying to get you to leave.
I even have a Mel, you know, a John that was there that flipped me off, you know, and I just thought, oh, great, you just made the cut.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
You won't be on the cutting room floor.
We are teaching kindness here in the U.S.
Hopefully he's not married.
There you go.
Tell me, in which countries did you film?
I shot in Thailand, Cambodia, India, Iraq, East Africa, Mexico, and then right here in the U.S. And the U.S., I was mostly in Southern California because it was close to me, and it's horrific. L.A., Orange County, San Diego, shot the border, you know, everything that happens, the trafficking across the border. I also went to Las Vegas and the Super Bowl, and that was 2 years ago, so it was in Minneapolis.
Do you feel that there is one thread, one common thread that you could, you know, kind of lift the veil for us? One little thing where you say, no matter where I was, whether it's Cambodia, whether it's LA, whether it's any of these countries, they had, all the women had this in common.
And you know what? I'm going to ask Kelly to answer that after we take a break. So if everybody, please stay with us. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we will be right back.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585. Or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. I am Alan Cardoza. With us is also Gabriella Von Ray. She is with us remotely. And we're talking with Kelly Galindo, and we're talking about the horrific exploitation of sex trafficking around the world. And she is exposing it through her documentary called 26 Seconds. So when we went to break, there was a question. So if you can share a little bit about that.
Gabrielle, could you ask me again?
Yes.
Absolutely. I am just so curious. As a woman myself, you know, we get into scrapes in life, and sometimes we don't know how we got there. And so my question is, for all women listening to this, lift the veil. What is that one little tiny speck of common thread that you found, whether it was in Cambodia, whether it was in LA, wherever it was, in this sex trafficking? Because I think there is a common denominator.
It's not a tiny thread. It's a huge thread. Every okay. single girl that I interviewed, every single one were molested as children. So what happens is it already breaks down their self-esteem, their confidence, and they're already prone to be trafficked.
Yep.
So that's the one thing. The other thing that's that I asked, I would say, who are your Johns? Who are your customers? Every single one is married. That's
married.
Married. So okay. that. So, I remember Paul Lauer. He marketed Passion of the Christ, Chronicles of Narnica, and Narnia, and the Bible series, and he's waiting to for my project to get done so he can market my film. But Paul asked me, he said, what are the three top things that could change this? And I said, you know, I said, because we deal, these organizations I've highlighted, they deal in either prevention, rescue, restoration, reintegration, or prosecution. The organizations don't, but the, you know, the HT experts and the law enforcement. And he said, well, what are the top three? And I said, there aren't a top three. I mean,
you need all of them.
Yes. Rescuing the survivor, restoring the survivor, reintegrating the survivor so that they have a craft and a trade where they can earn income so they don't go back are so important to the survivor. I said, but prevention and prosecution is the thing that will change, put a dent in this, in human trafficking. Because prevention would be, so education, like in poverty-stricken areas, we have organizations that do prevention where if the children are don't have parents, basically it's kind of like an orphanage, but they a few of the organizations that I've highlighted have that. So these children would have been trafficked if they weren't in these homes being taken care of. So prevention is extremely imperative, but prosecution also is. And so now going back to every single John is married. So here in the United States, you know, we have that luxury where citizens, by voting in laws, can change things. Right. I mean, they don't have this luxury in some other third world countries, but here in the States they do, which means if they changed, if a John was caught buying sex instead of giving a slap on their wrist, if it was a $20,000 fine and minimum 5 years in jail, which they wouldn't spend 5 years, they'd spend 6 months to a year. And then they have to go home and tell their wife and family. We need to pay $20,000 and I'm going to jail and there'll be no income coming into the home for 5 years. I can tell you there'd be less of this.
Well, and it's a great point. And it's already worked when you look at drunk driving, because the time in which drunk driving started to become something, because it was continually increasing for many, many years. It was increasing. And the only time in which it actually started to go down was when they put some teeth in the laws. And they increase the fines to a point in which people then they would think about it and go, wait a minute.
That's right.
You know, this is now not just something that's going to affect me temporarily. It's going to affect my family.
And then they did campaigns.
Yes,
that's right.
Exactly.
Campaigns with Bob.
Yep.
And I don't
designate the driver.
And I don't want to say that traffickers just aren't as equally responsible. They are, and there should be more severe when they're caught. They should spend a lifetime in prison, I think. Mm-hmm. Anyone that would rape and sell children for sex should go to prison. But the reason why I'm stressing about stricter laws on the Johns is because that's the demand. If there was no demand, then the traffickers wouldn't be doing it. The reason why traffickers are selling children and women is because it's easier and they make more money and they spend less time in jail than selling drugs and weapons.
Which is exactly, yeah. That used to be, and it isn't until they have put more teeth in the laws that
yes.
You know, and again, I think I've told this story before, but on one of the cases that we were on, and the undercover operative on that was in the van talking to the trafficker, and who said, you know, and the trafficker was from Colombia, and he said he's made his business decision shift has been because of the fact that he can make more money selling a woman, you know, over and over again than he could a gram of cocaine.
That's right. They say, you know, you sell drug or a gun, you make the money once. A woman, you can sell her 10 times a day for a span of probably 15 years.
Right. And it used to be that the you would go to jail longer for selling the drug than if you did the woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now that part fortunately has changed.
Do you discuss in your documentary at all that aspect of money? Money, greed.
Oh, it's all about money for everyone.
Because I when I hear this, I just, you know.
It's not just greed from the traffickers. I mean, that's part of it. You know, they're making money. That's why they're doing it. But also the need of money. They're in very, poverty-stricken countries like Cambodia and India, their own mother and parents will sell their two-year-old child for pennies because they need money. So it's all about money at the child's expense.
Yeah.
They're actually, they even in Thailand, they're so happy when they have a girl. They're like, oh, she can take care of us. Like, they're going to sell that child. Like, it is crazy.
But it's attitude. Like I read something very, very recently. A teacher in Holland went to Thailand and then got caught in Thailand.
Oh, you mean a male teacher went there to buy children? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that, you know, why, I mean, we talk about mental health. It's almost like we need to talk about mental health with these men. You know, you have a wife at home.
That's right.
You know, they're discussed.
There's only two in the whole country, and I think it's brilliant. I filmed it, but the one I filmed is in San Diego. It's a John school. So when Johns get caught, they got to go to John school. I still think there need to be stricter laws, though. I think they need to pay $20,000 fine and go. But there's a John school, which means they get educated, and so they have a panel of survivors that are now advocates. So they're on the other side, but so that these Johns have to see that this is a person, and they'll have other Johns on the panel to talk about it. It's an addiction. It really is, right? Because it is an addiction. Because I asked the survivors, you know, who were more violent with you, the Johns or the traffickers? And they go, oh, the traffickers. Hardly ever. Johns are just there to pay their money, get off, and be gone. So it's not like they're violent people. Johns are need help.
Yeah,
they have addictions. So I really love this idea of this John school that they have in San Diego, and there should be more. They should be in every state, every city, just like AA meetings. So you can go to them anywhere.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I'd love to visit this John school.
I know. It's incredible, actually.
Some kindness to them, huh?
Yeah.
There you go. Well, there's another episode for the Dare to Be Kind TV show right there.
You're right there.
Another area, and I'd like, Kelly, for you to talk about a little more that has to do with homelessness and the amount of poverty that's going on out there, that's another way that we can really make a difference is that if we can reduce homelessness, that is going to reduce that. So share a little bit about some of your findings in that area.
homelessness is such a huge problem, especially in third world countries. I mean, it's horrible here mm-hmm. in the United States. That's a whole nother place that has to deal with nonprofits and the government, right? Mm-hmm. But I do know that where there's homelessness, there needs to be education. There needs to be help, like meaning giving them trades so that they can earn a living, so they don't right. have to sell their child. There has to be more aggressive in that area.
No, and I agree, but that's what I was saying is from a percentage standpoint, by knowing that there is such a great percentage of these people that are being exploited is because they are coming from poverty or they're coming from homelessness, that if when we make a difference by providing more for them in such a way, we are then also helping in another area. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, so for people to understand is that if the largest majority of the people who are being exploited are coming from that. Now, I've dealt a lot with the runaways, that it's not necessarily they're coming from homelessness.
No.
You know, so that's a different thing. And I have a client, a family that is hiring us and for us to try to get them out. That's a smaller, it's a smaller portion of the overall issues as it relates to the sex trade. But if we can make a difference on homelessness, we're not just feeding somebody, we're literally changing the course of their life.
Yes, know? It's like the, you know, you don't want to give someone a fish, you want to teach them to fish.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know. Can I add something, Kelly, here?
Mm-hmm.
As a woman myself, I remember when I was young, and I know that my parents were from another generation. I mean, mine really were. They were a lot older when they adopted me. But, I mean, it was almost, I think they already taught me that if you didn't do well in school, oh, too bad, you'll get married. And, you know, my mom had this little hesitation. She didn't think I was very pretty as a child. And she said, you might need to work a little harder at school.
Oh.
And the reason I bring this up is not like, oh, but I have somewhere in the back of my mind as a young lady that the sex trade was an option for me.
Really?
And so I just want to, I don't think I've ever said this out loud, but I just kind of want to throw it out there because, you know.
No, the reason why I say, like,
understand that, but I think there are many like me.
The reason why I say really is not in judgment, but in question mark, because my background is I was an actress for many years, you know, my young 20s. So when I'm interviewing these girls, I feel a kindred spirit. I mean, I wasn't trafficked, but I certainly was exploited. Mm-hmm. You know, and so the reason why I go really to you is because I think being an actress and you're around exploitation really amongst directors and producers and, you know, and you're wanting to get a job and there's girls that are vulnerable that move here to Hollywood without their family. Like, I felt always lucky because my family lived here, you know, but mm-hmm. that was something, an option on the table. You know, not sex trafficking, but prostitution, really. You know,
mm-hmm.
I forget her name, Heidi Fleiss or something. She did it to models and mm-hmm. actresses in the business. You know, it was a real thing happening. So, mm-hmm. but coming from you, though, saying you felt it was an option, I'm in shock.
Yep.
But
I think, I mean, if you think of it, my mom, between 1966, my adoption, and her death in 2012, had that attitude. And that's why I think awareness and education is key. Mm. And I hear you say it. I hear Alan say it every day. But we never pick an ordinary person. In this case, I just said what I felt because we know it's an option. I bet you anything, Kelly, if I asked 10 of my girlfriends during that era, they will all say it was an option. We knew that if we weren't pretty enough, we could have had the sex trade, and I'll add something horrific, and I find this part horrific, that when I was 15, my dad said, I do not know where you got this idea from. And I said, well, mom, kind of blah, blah, blah. And then he said, I thought we saved you from the sex trade by adopting you. And I was like, whoa. So
what country are you from?
Pakistan.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And in the orphanage, they did tell me later that all the girls would have become, after, you know, between 5 and 10, you do the sewing part.
Yeah.
You know, like little things that you sew. And then from 10 on, because they're mature very, very early. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about their bodies. So basically most Pakistani and Indian children get their period between 7 and 10. And so, yeah, then you're part of the sex trade.
Wow.
While living at a Catholic orphanage.
Well, I'm wondering, because, you know, we are unconscious. Is, you know, you definitely, how old were you when you got adopted?
3 years old. So okay. when I knew that, I was told that kind of the sex trade was an option. Being a hooker was an option if nothing would work out. I must have been 12.
Yeah, but I'm thinking you heard it even from 1 to 3.
Earlier, yeah.
Yes, it's just unconscious, yeah. You know, and it's there.
Okay, gotcha.
That's okay. I mean, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, me too.
I probably did. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saw it, you know, if you didn't hear it, you saw it, you know, so it's not becomes an option. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is my next question, actually, leaning into that. I follow one of the groups, and I wish I knew their name today, like right off the bat, but I don't. And they're doing awesome work. And they taught me a lot about the sex trafficking. But what I've also learned, and I wanted your take on this, that there are many children being adopted, you know, as a grown child, meaning 8 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old, boys and girls from Mexico, other places in the U.S., and they're all used for sex trade.
Absolutely. It's happening.
And what's your take on that? How can Alan and I and everyone that's listening be vigilant without being a busybody?
If you see something, say something, number one. There's a great film.
A busybody.
Yeah. There's a great film called Trafficked that's out there right now. And it's and the woman that worked for social services was doing just that. So I recommend people to watch that to get educated. And if you see something, do something.
All right. Now I want to touch on some listener questions real quick, but we're down to about 2.5 minutes. So This one reads, my husband's daughter from his previous marriage disappeared when she was 16 years old. The trauma of never finding her devastated his life for a number of years. To this day, he believes she was a victim of human trafficking. We have two teens, and as hard as it is to show them these type of films to our kids, we believe it is critical for them to be fully aware of the dangers in our own backyard. We look forward to your documentary when it hits mainstream, and we'll be looking out for it. This is from Melissa in New Jersey, and she adds, what else do either of you, I guess that means me, suggest that we do?
Oh, I would volunteer. Find an organization. I don't know where you live, but you can't, if you go onto my website.
In New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey. Okay. I'm not working with an organization in New Jersey, but you certainly can Google it. But an organization that is working in anti-human trafficking and just serve in some capacity, and you will learn.
I second that. And then another quick question. This one says, I read an article about an analysis on human trafficking across the world, which also included forced labor. The study identified three tiers. Tier one included governments that are acknowledging the problem and making an effort to curb it. Tier two is slowly coming around, and tier three are doing virtually nothing. A few of the worst offenders that were listed in this was China, Russia, Belarus, Venezuela, Iran, and Central Africa. Though some of these have strict laws on the books, they rarely prosecute anyone. I read that you traveled around the world to put together your documentary. What do you see happening in these tier three countries in the future? And this is from Ben in California.
Well, I certainly know that all of the films and documentaries that are happening is creating awareness. I do know from the countries that I've been to, there's incredible nonprofit organizations that are working either in prevention, rescue, restoration, or reintegration. But this has been an issue that's been around from the beginning, and it will be around. I don't think my film's going to stop it, all we can do is create awareness and a call to action. And just like when Gabrielle started the conversation, we can all do something. We can all work together. So, and we must, we must. You know, we're a tribe, and we must protect children, period.
Okay, and because we're running out of time, just real quickly, so a call to action. What can people do to help right now? And this is a project that many people would want to support. You know, can they donate with their time, their talent, their money? What can they do now?
So in helping 20 seconds, please go on to the website and click on the funding campaign. And, you know, we need to raise funding for post-production. Excuse me. So if you go to 26 seconds, plural with an S, doc for documentary, 26secondsdoc.com, scroll down to the bottom on the homepage, and you'll see the funding campaign. Please click on it, read about it, and do what you can. But I also, if you don't have money, you can volunteer to organizations. You can, whatever your gifts are, whatever you have available to you. But, you know, even go to my website, because there's a tab called NGO organizations. And all of the organizations that are highlighted in my documentary, if you click on their logo, it will take you to their website. And get, you know, whatever stirs your heart, whichever organization that you feel passionate about, call them, get involved.
That's great. Kelly, thank you so much for what you're doing. I just want to acknowledge that you're really making a positive difference. You've dedicated so much of your life to this, and I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Gabriella.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you, Gabriella.
I love it. I'm not done with the questions.
Yeah, well, except for the fact that we're out of time. So, but again, so for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar. Tune in next Monday when we'll be joined by Mary Havens to discuss her new book, The Shadows of My Heart, Overcoming Domestic Violence and Abuse. If you get the opportunity, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. You can subscribe, and it'll come directly to you through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Vimeo, Spreaker. We're apparently connected to all of them. So, and I appreciate my producer who takes care of these things. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It'll help us reach more people, and we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page. If you like what you're reading, please like us. And Kelly has one more thing to add.
One more thing to say. I just want to let you guys know that 26 Seconds, the pilot, is available now on Amazon Prime, iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. So you can see the pilot and the trailer on those platforms right now.
That's great.
So, I'll share it this afternoon on social media.
Thank you.
Perfect. And for everybody out there, be good human beings. And we will be here next week for your listening pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.